Nova Scotia budget was presented last week. Today, we're here with Michael Kaplan with Affordable Housing Nova Scotia to learn more about what this budget is going to be allocated towards and where the funds will be used.
Hi, I'm Michael Kaplan. I'm the Executive Director of the Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia, and I joined AHANS just 2 months ago in January of this year. And maybe I'll tell you a bit about AHANS as well, Sarah. So AHANS is the Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia. It's been around for quite a long time as the kind of an advocate advocacy group to promote the need to invest in and maintain the existing affordable housing across Nova Scotia. Our mission is really to grow and grow new and maintain and advocate for affordable housing in this province. We do that through a couple of different ways. The first is we are ourselves, as of the last couple of years, owners and operators of various types of housing within the Halifax area, as well as a couple of other spots in Nova Scotia. And some of those are deeply, deeply affordable supported housing units. Some of those are deeply, deeply rent geared to income housing. And then others are kind of mixed market, but still affordable. So more towards the workforce housing. That's an unfortunate term, but there isn't much of a better one to use that people understand. We also are the local community entity for the federal government's Reaching Home program, which aims to reduce homelessness by 50% by the year 2028. Obviously, nobody in Canada has been successful yet to achieving that goal through that program. However, the program has been quite helpful in responding to the recent housing crisis. So Reaching Home, as the community entity, we effectively provide additional grants, either operating or capital grants, to other organizations who are focused on the homelessness file. So that can be anything from capital to help build, renovate, or acquire new housing or shelter for folks experiencing homelessness, or staff and other types of supports for individuals. So things like housing support workers, intensive case managers, as well as what we call client support. So you can imagine individuals experiencing homelessness require more than just people and places. There's other things that they need. And so there's some money within that program that can help people get what they need, whether it be a bus ticket, whether it be a security deposit, whether it be paying a power bill. So the intent of that program is to both keep and reduce people from entering homelessness, as well as end homelessness. So I think you might have frozen on me there. So I'm just going to pause for a moment. Oh, you're good? Okay. Excellent. So I think that's kind of the gist of myself and of AHANS. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Michael. Can you tell us a little bit about the latest budget? When did it take place? And tell us about your opinion. What did you think?
Sure. So last week's budget was announced. I think it was Thursday. The provincial government announced its budget. And then yesterday, the federal government also came out with its budget. And I think the response to both is not enough now on the housing file. I think we really do need more meaningful, deeply, and really I think the word to use now is massive investment on the housing file. And unfortunately, we've not seen that type of investment like we've seen in healthcare. We've recently seen dental care programs. And it feels as if the investment that's required to build and maintain the existing affordable housing community across this country is just not something that any of the governments, both provincially and federally, are putting their attention to. And I recognize, we do recognize that, you know, that doesn't mean that there isn't money for housing in both of those budgets, I think, you know, but the challenge is that there's not much new money for housing in either of those budgets. And that's really a concern for us, because the crisis isn't getting better. And so the hope was we would see more and massive investment like we've seen in healthcare. But unfortunately, governments have chosen to kind of either temper their spending generally or divert it to other priorities.
How much funding would you like to see allocated toward the housing crisis?
Well, I think that's a difficult question, right? We're a small nonprofit, so we're not really measuring the quantum, I think, of what's needed from a dollar figure. I think the reality is governments haven't in a long time made the meaningful investments required to build and maintain existing affordable housing. And so it's really fallen to the not-for-profit sector and the community housing sector to fill that gap. And I think nobly we have been attempting to. It's not just AHANS, there's other agencies out there right across Nova Scotia that are working to do that hand in hand with us. And I think the struggle has been we are constantly reacting and accessing very specific programs that are often very difficult to access because we are nonprofits. We're not capitalized like for-profit developer. We don't have engineers and project managers on staff. We couldn't afford them. And so to access those programs to kind of make things happen has been difficult. So the hope was the massive investment would kind of be a bit less restricted as well. How much is required? I think, you know, when you look at what's being spent on healthcare and a recognition that it's billions really over years that's being spent, I think in the provincial budget, several hundred million new dollars. And I think at the end of last year's fiscal year, several hundred million new dollars are being spent to bonus healthcare workers, all very important causes that need to be funded. But for housing, we see $17 million. That's a stacking of both the provincial and federal government in kind of the March Madness spending. And for housing, we see, you know, really new housing. We see $8 million for supportive housing and then some money for rent supplements, right? So the it's not hundreds of millions and it's not billions that's being spent. It continues to be very small relative to the value of the budget investments. And I think, you know, government has chosen to focus its attention on more upmarket housing, on the supply problem in Nova Scotia. And most of that supply is happening outside of the where people would traditionally need it, right? So it's in the sprawl, which again, I'm not here to criticize those decisions. But certainly where we're seeing government make interventions on advancing the new development, those are not necessarily going to be available for students at Dalhousie University, as an example. They're a bit out of the accessible core. Most of these and a lot of the investments are happening in rural Nova Scotia, which also needs those investments. But it's again, it's not really targeted at where we're seeing the problem grow the most, which is within the urban center of the municipality. Now again, the province has made and the federal government has made investments. We at AHANS have been recipients of some of those investments as well. We're very grateful for those. This is in no way to say, you know, we don't appreciate the good work that's been done to date to fund the projects that we or and other folks have put forward. But I think what's being missed is if you believe in there's a healthcare crisis, then you need to solve the housing crisis too, because stable housing is one of the most effective ways to reduce people's reliance on the healthcare system for other issues further on down the line. So if we really believe that the healthcare crisis requires investment, then that investment is also a housing investment. So, and if you look at the social determinants of health, housing is the first, right? Stable housing means that you will. And so I think if you were to talk about a citizen as an investment for the government, if you house them, ensure everyone is stably housed, you in fact spend less on them over their lifetime because they're not falling into the healthcare system for addiction, for mental illness, for other issues that people are looking for, even for shelter. People will walk into an emergency room because it's a warm place to be. And maybe, you know, yeah, it's an 18-hour wait to see a doctor. Well, hey, that's 18 hours on a cold night that you don't have to be outside potentially, right? And so I think if you want to take pressure off the emergency rooms, if you want to take pressure off the healthcare system, then you need to really start making investments in housing as well. And those two things go hand in hand. I would also say education, right? And I think what we're not seeing is when we look at the massive inward migration across Canada, right? 1,050,000 new Canadians last year, something like 35,000 new people in Nova Scotia last year, and well over 20,000 of them in Halifax, in the greater Halifax region. We're not seeing governments focus on the investments in affordable housing and education. We're only really seeing them play catch up on healthcare in their budgets. And that's really a difficult place. As an advocate for housing, we want to bring more people here, which is necessary, right? We want to be a sustainable economy for the next 100 years. We need that level of immigration. But where's the plan for the newcomers to ensure that they receive the same level of service, the same access to housing, the same access to education and healthcare. We continue to play catch up. Government programs continue to play catch up with the status quo, with the problems that are a result of this massive inward migration, as opposed to building plans that will you know, we need to kind of say, is this something we want to continue to do for the next 20 years? I believe it is. I think we need the inward migration. I think as an open society as Canada, it's really hard to say no to people who want to be here. But that there's an obligation to make investments in affordable housing, in education, and in healthcare if we want those people to join our society, right? We can't just drop them off in every community across this country and expect them to just be absorbed with an existing capacity.
How are we doing this year in comparison to the years before?
I mean, it's status quo, I would say, right? I think since 2020, what we've really been seeing is the housing crisis is a supply problem, right? There's not enough housing for the amount of people that are looking for it. I think things like the rent cap don't really do a lot to make more available housing. I think if you have housing, it's great. It's capped your rent. It's helping you keep your rent where it was or near where it was in a period of inflation. But it does nothing to make more housing available. In fact, most studies show it does quite the opposite. People will stay in the housing they're in, regardless of if they need it, because it's capped. Because as the capped rent and the market rent diverge, individuals will say, I can't pay that market rent. I'm going to stay in this three-bedroom by myself, right? That's available for me. So I think since the rent cap has come into place, since we've seen this inward migration into our municipality and our province, it's the same story we've been hearing for the last 3 years or so, that people who need housing are having a hard time finding it. People who need to move around are really struggling. And the real, I'll talk about, we also through our Reaching Home program, keep the data on our website, ahands.ca, around the actual in Halifax kind of characteristics of the population experiencing homelessness. That number continues to rise. As of this week, I think it's 890 individuals are chronically homeless. That doesn't mean they're living outside. We believe about 450 of them are. However, they could be couch surfing. They could be in and out of shelter, be staying at a hotel through one of the shelter diversion programs that government offers, right? But that population of individuals is about 890 people in the Halifax region. What we've seen since the pandemic is around between 200 and 250 people in that group are what we call high acuity. Those are what you would believe is your stereotypical person experiencing homelessness. They may be living with addiction. They may be living with a disability or mental illness. They may be living with past traumas that are contributing to a situation that makes them difficult to house. And so with a lack of support and a lack of available housing, they fall into homelessness. That number has effectively been the same since 2019, between 200 and 250. How do we get to 890? What are the characteristics of this new group of people experiencing homelessness? They're a group of people that have never really experienced the housing insecurity in their lives before. These are folks that have issues, so to say, that are contributing to their homelessness other than inadequate income. So you think about individuals that are working full-time jobs at your local kind of fast service restaurant, at your grocery store, at any kind of retail. They may be cleaners in offices, and all kinds of that typical population of lower income working individuals. More of that population seems to be falling into housing insecurity, and that might be because of just the inability to pay rent, right? The inability to pay the new rents that have happened because of the increased demand, right? Because of the supply problem I laid out. That's the group where there's not been a lot of support offered. And when we talk about the investment that's needed in new affordable housing, that's the group of people that I think new attention needs to be given to, right? I think the province has recently announced this week that they're going to rent out the entire DoubleTree Hotel on at the base of McDonald Bridge. That's 205 rooms. Now, two floors of that four or five floor hotel are already rented out by the province. So it's not a net 200 new spaces for individuals experiencing homelessness to go. But that's a great addition. But the people that will probably go into the hotels are that group of 200 to 250, right? Those are the people that are really difficult to find housing elsewhere. And they need a lot of different types of client supports. But there's really, again, if we want to house the other 680-90 people, it's just more affordable housing that's necessary, either by funding programs to allow not-for-profits to buy, funding programs to allow not-for-profits and community housing to build, or government stepping up and doing the same, right? We don't necessarily want to own this housing. We do this because the belief is if we don't, no one else will. And since 1996, we haven't seen the meaningful investments in housing, right? So in the same way, healthcare hasn't seen meaningful, right? The new hospital in Halifax was finished also in 1996. So now we're building a new one 30 years later. Great. And in the same way, the newest public housing hasn't been built since that period. And there's no plan. I think there's some hinting at government has some plans, but there hasn't really been a plan released that I'm aware of as to how government intends to build massively invest in new affordable public housing. We have a model, right? As a not-for-profit, we have a model that makes that available. It's based on research around mixed market housing that has the best outcomes for individuals that live in it. And it makes it affordable forever. So some people pay market rent, and then that helps, instead of taking profit, those higher rents help others who need affordable rents, pay what they can. And so much like our income tax system works, right? So we just apply that to rent. And that's been proven to work in other jurisdictions. And that's the model we'd like to do. I don't think the current public housing portfolio of approximately 11,000 units is all rent geared to income effectively, either on your pension or you're receiving a rent geared to income rent. That's not necessarily the best type of housing to offer an entirely affordable place for individuals to live.
What are some effective ways you would like to see the province tackle the housing issues?
Sure. So build more themselves, I think, would be to me one of the fastest ways and one of the most effective ways, because government has access to the capital, government has access to the land, and government can get it done with the least effective barriers, if you know what I mean, right? The only barriers to making affordable housing happen are government created, in effect, right? They decide they want to do it, they can make it happen. That's one way if they were themselves to get going. I think there's other ways that long-term have better outcomes. So to me, the most effective way long-term is to look at the not-for-profit and community housing sector and capitalize us really well. So right now we typically need a little bit of money as a not-for-profit, and then we can pull a little bit of money from the city and a little bit more from the province, and then a massive amount, relatively massive, so, 90-95% of that you can pull from the federal government. And you kind of pull all that together, and you spend months going back and forth and providing this form and this report and these designs and these insurance documents. And this is how the sausage of affordable housing is made, Sarah. And it takes 6 to 8 months from when you have a good development, and you've gotten pricing, and you've done all that work, and you put in a proposal, and you're so excited about it. And then those 6 to 8 to 10 months go by, and when you finally break ground on the thing, you're already exhausted. And now you actually have to build it. More money in those programs would be quite helpful. Make more staff on those programs so they can move more quickly. I would say the province moves quite quickly, the municipality moves quite quickly. Unfortunately, CMHC doesn't have local staff to work with us. We're typically working with folks on Montreal Road in Toronto, in Ottawa, at the national headquarters for CMHC. Very lovely people, but overworked, and they're handling across Canada. So they're prioritizing Halifax with Toronto and Vancouver and Calgary and all across Quebec, and they're on multiple files. And so it makes it really difficult to move quickly when you're dealing with a national headquarters, right? You don't have that local decision-making. Years ago, they used to have folks in downtown Halifax, and you'd get everyone in a room, and you'd hash this thing out. And, a couple of weeks after an application, you'd move on to the next steps. unfortunately, that's not the case in the way the government has chosen to consolidate operations in Ottawa. So your question, though, was what's the best way to make this happen? And I think one is more money in the existing programs. Another way would be to, much like the government did under the Reaching Home program that we operate, designate nonprofits in community. Look at me really hard, audit me, go through all my books, do background checks on my team, and then give me access to capital so I can go and compete with the private sector to make massive and large scale affordable housing developments happen. This model took place in Quebec years ago, right? Quebec has 55,000 not-for-profit housing units. And the Quebec government, when the federal government kind of said, hey, we're getting out of the affordable housing game, and they through the social housing agreement in 1996, they delegated that responsibility onto provinces. Quebec said, we got it from here. They're the only province who did. BC picked it up a few years later as well, but right on the moment, Quebec said, okay, and we're going to in turn hand this off to the not-for-profit sector. And they were able to hand land and capital into a number of different agencies. Some of them have 10,000 units by themselves in the Montreal area. And they're large landlords who offer nothing but affordable housing. And they've got robust staff. They've got senior teams that would compete with the senior teams of the Killams and the Southwests that you see here locally operating in Nova Scotia. But they've had almost 30 years to do that. The model is not, these aren't novel ideas. These are things that have been happening across the world. And there's examples right here in Canada. It just needs government to trust the community to deliver on really their responsibility, which is housing, right?
Do you think in the next decade or so, do you think housing is going to continue to be an issue? Are we going to be seeing more people experiencing homelessness?
I think if everything stays the same, if we continue to see the immigration numbers, the necessary immigration numbers for a sustainable society that we've been seeing, I think if we continue to see the inward migration into cities, I think if we continue to see investment at the levels that it's been for the last number of years, then this problem is only going to get worse. The trend is scary. If you take on average 10 in Halifax, 10 new individuals every week are entering into the chronic homelessness system, and extrapolate that out by 10 years, that adds up really fast. And what we've been seeing to date is the investments aren't keeping up with the need. And so if the investment stays the same, the need's going to continue to increase. I do believe that the private sector will eventually find ways to catch up in creating more housing, but that's not going to be meaningfully affordable, nor should we ask the private sector to do the job of government and the community housing sector, which is provide forever affordable housing, right? There's a role for the private sector to play. They've got a lot of expertise in getting developments built. They need to build more supply more quickly, and I think in different configurations. I think the 2,000 square foot apartment is dead in our society. And I think there's a lot more smaller apartments in serviced areas. And I think, the waterfront will be your backyard. It will be your common space. As it stands now, just like we said about healthcare 5 years ago, if we don't make massive investments in healthcare, I think Premier McNeil stood up and said, we're building new hospitals and we're doing the thing out in Bears Lake and we're doing something at Cape Breton. And that's the start of a new healthcare era. And Premier Houston has put his own twist on that, and you've doubled down on those investments. All very important, meaningful things that need to happen on healthcare. If we don't do the same thing on housing, but we continue the levels of inward migration, that again, I will say are very necessary to keep our society sustainable for the next couple of generations, then the problem's only going to get worse. And we've seen that in other parts of the world where government has not made investments in housing, the homelessness. This population, the insecure, insecurely housed, continues to increase.
Thank you so much, Michael. Is there anything else you would like to add in terms of housing or the budget or information?
Sure. The budget, to me, there's not a lot to comment on because there's not a lot of new initiatives there. And I think to me, the real takeaway is not to detract from the existing levels of spending, but the hope was we would see the levels of spending on housing that we've seen on healthcare and in other initiatives. It seems like it's really easy for government to build a highway, to build a hospital, but they still struggle with coming up with a plan to build housing. Now, the provincial government has indicated they are releasing a housing strategy later this year. There were a number of inputs. You know, there was a survey that was out for quite some time. There was a housing needs assessment report that has been completed. That hasn't been released yet, but that they did hire an independent kind of research firm to kind of understand where housing is required across this province. And so maybe, you know, maybe the hope will be when later this spring, when that report is released, there may be additional announcements and investments in housing. I remain hopeful. The other thing I'd like to leave you with is there's a really strong community around this file in Nova Scotia. And I haven't seen the amount of people focused on and giving the attention to the homelessness and housing file. And to me, that's exciting, right? When people's attention, when good people in a number of nonprofits like the Salvation Army and ATSEM and the YWCA, you know, and many other agencies are really leaning in and focusing on this issue, to me, that is exciting. And so I think I'm hopeful that between the what's being hinted at by government might come this spring, and the stakeholders that have really stepped up to make things happen, that we can start to turn the tide of the crisis that we continue to fight every day.
Thank you so much, Michael.